Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Okay, Reg, how are you doing today, friend? Doing okay? Good, good, good. Yeah, yeah. Well, very good. Good ear. That's why you're an engineer. Yeah, I'm a little nasal today. I've had a kind of a bad cold the last two or three days. I don't know where it came from. I wasn't outside. We had such horrible cold weather. I have been pretty much hibernating. I'm not sure where I caught the bug, but I did. But voice is there. Instrument. I've got a little water here to help me through. We'll be fine. All right. You ready to go, sir? Good. Let's do this thing. Put it in the box. Put it in the box. Put it in the book. Put it in the box. Put it in the box. Put the box away. No. Put it in the book. Episode, what do we got? 506? You tell me. You got the book. It's 506, right? Yeah. Okay. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown, and I'll give you a podcast. You just hit that button. You got the easy part. Here we go. Star, smile, strong. Get that instrument a little more clear. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, it's always important to listen to the podcast, but it's just as important to get out there and promote that podcast. So tell your friends, say your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, what you like, what you hear, whether you've been listening for years or just months or even days, you can go to WGNRadio.com. You go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will find loads and loads and loads, in fact, you can load more, loads and loads and loads of podcasts from the past to keep you either clued in to what we've been doing or also giving you a hint of what we've done so you know where we're going. You just can load more and scroll down and load more. We're going to load one more right now. The latest episode, 506. So here we are. Lots going on in the world today, in this world, not just today, but of recent times, right? Lots of stuff talking. I mean, we're in the midst of unrest, both nationally here in the United States, internationally, things are always kind of teetering. As much as we're trying to calm things, it seems in the storm, to calm them, there's chaos. So who knows what's happening? It's an interesting time. I've said this many times over the last several years. It's an interesting time. The what's going to be the most interesting is to see where it all ends. You know, what I find interesting, I use that word a lot here, but is there's always chaos. There's always churn. It's just a question of, is it worth it? And that's what we're going to have to start to figure out. Is it worth it? You know, I mean, I always have been trying to use the analogy of if you ever have have you ever done any renovation in your house, for instance, like say you decided to renovate your kitchen or renovate your basement or renovate your bathroom, depending on the size and the complexity of the renovation. Let's say you're tearing it down to the studs and you're really starting from scratch. It's a big job. You've decided that whatever you have is no longer acceptable and you just don't want to do something cosmetic. You want to change it at its core. You want to completely shift it and make it something completely different. So you take it down to the studs and it's raw. And it's empty, and it's kind of scary. And it's also very inconvenient and chaotic and uncertain and angering, and it's delayed, and you never know if you did the right thing. You don't know if it feels like it's never going to end. And if you've ever been through one of those kind of renovation projects, you know that your life is changed quite a bit. Sometimes it could be a week, depending, as I said, on the complexity of the project. It could be months, and it's not easy, and you have to break your routine and get used to something new, and it's inconvenient, and you're not used to it, and it's angering, and as I said before, there's delays, and things aren't going the way you thought they would go, and so you have to make new plans, and it's this. It seems like it's just this money pit and this ongoing thing. And as I said, it can go on for a couple of weeks, or even a couple of months, or who knows, maybe even a year. Once again, depending on the overall scope of the project. But what I like to try to think about is 5 years after that project is done. And as at times unacceptable and unbelievable and untenable as this renovation project at times seems, and it's created a lot of anger and stress and uncertainty and costliness, when it was finally finished, and you're sitting in that room, in that basement, or you're in that bathroom taking a shower, or you're preparing your dinner in that kitchen, are you thinking about the renovation process that it took? Or are you thinking about, wow, I'm happy to be in this room, and I'm glad I did this project? It seems that whatever the sausage making entails, once the product is finished and it's to your satisfaction, it's easy to forget that difficult time, that stressful time, that chaotic time, that to the brink of disaster time that you were thinking about for so many months while the renovation was going on. But now the renovation is done, you're living in it, and you're happy you did it. And so I know a lot of people are having a lot of problems dealing with the chaos of today. And so I think, regardless of your politics, I think that to help you get through the day and get through the months and the years ahead, we have to think about the long range of whatever is happening. And will there be any positives about this? I don't know, but I know that if we're going to continue to simmer and escalate, it's certainly not going to get any better. That's for sure. But anyway, I bring that up because with so much going on in the world today, I think we're missing a lot of stuff too. And some things that we're missing that, you know, because this, what's going on with the immigration and the ICE and Minneapolis and all this is sucking up so much oxygen in the news cycle and in people's minds. And it has been for months now, not just Minneapolis of the last couple of weeks, obviously with some of the tragedies that have happened, but over the last, year or so. And so I'd hate that we would bypass or overlook things that are worth our attention and that maybe are bright spots amidst the chaos. And there's maybe something that we can rally around and celebrate together. There's so few events like this that we can do that. So when they come around, I think instead of just letting them pass us by because we're so focused on this other thing, that we should broaden our scope and cling to and look for these areas of commonality and agreement and communal celebration. There's no question how divided we are. And I believe that's going to continue for many years, sadly. But there are other things in the world that have unifying kinds of aspects to them. And I hope they're not getting lost amidst the emotions that have and the tragedies that have surrounded some of these events that have dominated the news and people's mindset for the last several months. I'm not diminishing their importance, but I'm just saying is that you can't get swallowed up in this. And so looking ahead, there are a few events coming up that can be, hopefully, those areas that we can, for a second or two at least, figuratively and literally, join together and actually celebrate and together and experience together and have some positivity together. That word together has not been used quite a bit in the last several years. Now, one of them, obviously, is the Super Bowl, which is going to be coming up next week on Sunday. And this week, the opening ceremony, same weekend, big weekend for kind of communal sporting events. I don't know if this is just the way the calendar falls, but at the end of this week, on Friday, the opening ceremonies of the Winter Olympics begin in Italy on Friday the 6th. On Sunday the 8th is the Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks against the New England Patriots. But there's another thing happening. Those are getting a lot, those have been getting a lot of, you know, obviously, you know, anything with sports gets a lot of play on television. There's a lot of advertising dollars assigned to that, broadcasting, PR. And so those events, the Super Bowl and the Olympics, get a lot of big news. I should mention that this week, in case you don't know, there's also the 150th edition of the Westminster Dog Show happening. This week. In fact, as we speak today, I'm posting this on Monday, February 2nd, 2nd and 3rd. You can watch the dog show. Famous Westminster Dog Show. There's a lot of things out there that's happening. They're happening right now in the midst of all this chaos and all this protest and all this anger and all this divisiveness that we might be able to find some common ground. But there's one that I find interestingly, and there's that word again, interestingly, has not gotten as much notice and play as you would have thought or expected. Now, leading up to it, it's also going to happen on this Friday. At least we'll see. That's the planned date for this to happen on Friday, February 6th. There's always possibilities it could be delayed. But just off the top of your head, let me ask you a question. Did you know that the United States is sending a manned spacecraft to the vicinity of the moon for the first time since 1972? Were you aware of that? We're not going back to the moon yet. We're not landing on the moon. But we have not even been in the moon's neighborhood for more than 50 years. We were space crazy in the 60s. It was a space race. It was a chest-beating, ideological tit-for-tat, if you will. Starting in the late 50s, during the Cold War, between communism and democracy, socialism and capitalism. Does that sound interesting? Does that sound familiar? As I said, learn from history. That's why I always say, go back and listen to where we've been so you know where we're going. Here we are, you know, 70, you know, 50, 60 years later. We're talking about the same things again. But did you know, I mean, this is part one, this is phase one of us ultimately landing on the moon again, where we haven't been since 1972. And this Friday, February 6th, if all goes well, and as I said, I tape these in advance, so if there's been a delay announced, hopefully you will forgive me. But as it stands right now, the launch for the Artemis II moon project is set for February 6th, and four astronauts, I believe one of them is Canadian, will be flying to the moon, and they will circle the moon and come back. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if, from the information that I've been looking at, if they take off on time, they might get there on Super Bowl Sunday, which is might be a coincidence and might not be. Now, once again, they're not landing. They're just going to go around in the vicinity of the moon. They're gonna go around the moon and come back. But that is more that we've done in terms of the moon since 1972. As I said, we were space crazy. I'm not old enough to be fully immersed in the space race. I was only a little kid when we landed. I was, I don't know, 3 or 4 when we landed. So I have memories, vague memories. I remember my parents, though, especially my mom, going out of her mind. And I remember she bought, I still have the newspaper. She kept the newspapers from that time. I still have them. She decorated, you know, because you're a little kid, you know, you don't really decorate your room until you get a little older. At least I didn't back in my day. You know, parents used to decorate kids' rooms up until a certain point, and then kids would go, okay, wait a minute, it's my turn now. I don't know if that happens, still happens. It might happen a little earlier than it used to when we were kids. But, yeah, I had space pennants and pictures of Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and Michael Collins. I mean, this was huge, that man landed on the moon in July of 1969. And as I said, that was not only a huge accomplishment for mankind, but it was a huge triumph for the United States over Russia during the Cold War, where Russia and the Soviet Union were just cascading over parts of Europe and building this empire and becoming a threat with nuclear weapons to the American way of life. And there was no two ways about it. There was, and it's still, there's still a manifesto, right? It may not seem as obvious, but, you know, China and still wants to become the biggest country in the world. They still want to overcome us in one way or the other. And so any kinds of one-upmanship that could happen during the 50 years of the Cold War, 50, 60 years of the Cold War, was very important to one side or the other. And in the late 50s, Russia surprised the world and surprised America. And that doesn't happen very often. But when it came to space, we let our guard down. And Russia, all of a sudden, sent up this Sputnik satellite into space, and we were like, wait, what? And we suddenly said, wait a minute, we don't know what the implications of space may be, but once again, in this ongoing competition, in this ongoing show of strength, in this ongoing show of superiority of ideologies, capitalism versus socialism, democracy over communism, we can't let the other side look like they are better than us in any way, shape, or form. And it really was kind of a childish, as I said, like a tit-for-tat thing, but that was the way the world was. We didn't have this connectivity and everybody knowing what everybody's doing like we do now. It was a very isolated world in many ways. And so the Sputnik satellite launched by Russia through American people, American government, and American leaders for a loop. And the fear was that Russia could somehow control space, and if they controlled space, then they can control the world. And so while Sputnik happened in the late 50s, when John Kennedy took over as president, is one of his main goals, and I always love to do this impersonation, but he gave a speech in which he said, "We are going to go to space within this decade." I love the way he said decade. He had that East Coast accent. Within this decade. And of course, sadly, he was killed a couple of years after that, and he never got to see. But he entered the United States into the space race. And not only did he enter them into the space race, but he decided that we would win the space race before we ever really entered it. Even though Russia had a huge advantage of us over us, Kennedy's optimism and confidence in American capabilities, and especially, once again, the chest thumping of the Cold War, he made a very bold prediction that Americans would get to the moon first before the end of this decade. And with only about 4 months to spare, we did get to the moon before the end of the decade on July 20th, 1969. But as it is with America, once we achieve something, once we kind of put our competitors aside for a while, then we move on. And it's really for us the thrill of the chase and that moment of victory. And then, but we don't build upon things very often. We love to pound our chest and stake our claim, but then we move on. We're a country of moving to the next shiny object. And so we were so space crazed throughout the 60s and even into the early 70s. Ultimately, we went to the moon 6 times, the last time being in December of 1972. And we haven't been back. Have not been back. In fact, for Chicago people, it should be noted that the last human to have walked on the Earth was Eugene Cernan, born right here in Chicago. Triton College, in the suburbs of Chicago, right on the border, actually, has a space center dedicated to Eugene Cernan. Last man to step on the moon. James Lovell just died, but Cernan died a few years ago. But it's been since 1972, and we just forgot about the moon. The predictions after we stepped on the moon in July of 1969, I've got the newspapers here. My mom kept all these magazines, the Look magazines, the Life magazines. This was earth-shattering news. And then once we proved that, A, we could do it, B, that we did it before the Russians, and C, once you got up there, we didn't really know what to do. We brought back a few rocks. The American psyche for space travel and exploration just kind of waned. I mean, let's not forget, 1972. A lot going on in the world in the mid-70s. a presidential campaign, Watergate, Vietnam still going on, the economy, later Nixon's resignation, a lot going on. So I could see to some extent why we may have gotten distracted, but this is my point, of my earlier point. We did this tremendous, we achieved this tremendous act, man leaving Earth for the first time, but not just leaving it, but going to another planetary body in the solar system. Not a planet, but another heavenly body, if you will. Less than 100 years before that, we just learned how to fly in the early 1900s. The Wright brothers, early 1900s. And now, not only were we able to lift off the ground for the first time in the early 1900s, but within 60, 70 years, we left the planet and walked on another planetary body. That's amazing. And so if you extrapolate it, and why wouldn't you at that time? People are like, well, wait a minute. Now that we've done this, I mean, in the next 10 or 15 years, we'll be living on the moon. Or in the next 10 or 15 years, we'll be going to Mars. Or we'll be living in space. I mean, the predictions and the aftermath of landing on the moon in 1969 were all over the board, because it was like, okay, wait a minute. If this is just scratching the surface, if we can do this now, oh my God. What's it going to be like in 10 years? What's it going to be like in 15 years? What's it going to be like in 20 years? What's it going to be like in 50 years? And after 1972, nothing happened. We never went any farther. We never went back. We continued to have manned space missions, but we never had a destination. They never had a clear purpose or a clear goal. What made the moon such a fascinating communal event for not only the United States but the world was that not only was there this competition between the United States and Russia, but there was also this deadline that almost a decade earlier, John Kennedy put his foot in this, you know, put a stake in the ground and said, we will get to the moon by the end of this decade. Okay. So now, that's what Americans like. We like goals. We like predictions. We like to see whether somebody who makes a bold prediction can fulfill that prediction. And we love competition. And we had competition with Russia. But it seemed like the irony, too, was that when Russia went to space and started to explore space, our initial fears that, oh, my God, well, if Russia is sending up a satellite and they're so far ahead of us with this space technology, what if they can attack us from space? Our imaginations of doom went just as far as our imaginations of wonder went. Like, oh my God, if we get to the moon, we can go to Mars, we can blah, 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 blah. But what turned out was that once Russia got beat in the space race, once we landed on the moon, you never heard Russia go back again. Russia's space plan just ended. It wasn't their space program wasn't about knowledge. It wasn't about expanding man's horizons as a species. It was clearly about beating the United States and showing our superiority. And when they got beat, they took their rocket home. They took their rocket off their launch pad and they went home. They never went to the moon. They didn't land anybody on the moon. There's still only one flag on the moon. It's the United States. So for all this competition and all this tit for tat and all this chest pounding, it turned out that Russia was real. We should have realized that the Soviet Union was a paper tiger at that point because they didn't continue. They didn't yearn. They didn't look for new ways to get to the moon and beyond. They clearly wanted to get to the moon first or get to space first to show their superiority of how great communism was over democracy on the world stage to convince all the other countries to join them against the United States. And once they got beat, they didn't continue to do it for mankind's knowledge sake, for the growth of man as an explorer. They probably were bankrupt. And once they got beat, they just sulked and went home. And we sort of did the same thing. Once we won, we didn't do anything either. I'm not criticizing the Russians really here. I'm criticizing all of us. Because we got there. And what did we do? We went back a few times. It became so blasé that no one even cared. And the fund went without the people's support. These very expensive space projects just weren't funded anymore. So NASA found some other things to keep some progress going. But in terms of manned space flights to different planets and things like that, it all just stopped. We achieved our goal. We got to the moon first. We beat Russia. We said we'd get there before the end of the decade, and we did. And we went back a few times just to prove that it wasn't a fluke. And so then we went on to different things. And so did everyone else. So did the United States government, so did NASA, and so did the American public. We just kind of said, well, okay, we did the moon, been there, done that. Instead of saying, wow, what's next? There was no what's next. It pretty much ended. Until now. And what sparked this Artemis II project that, as I said before, is at least right now scheduled to take off on February 6th? What sparked that? Well, in the last 50-some years since we were last on the moon, China's prominence in the world has certainly grown. Its economic power and its empirical, its empirical motivations and visions of being the number one world power. Well, if you have a checklist of how do we overcome the United States, you have to say, well, we have to outdo whatever they've done. So we have to say, well, we have to, you know, have a bigger economy. Okay, we have to do this and this. And getting to the moon is one of those things that the United States, in its 250-year history, has accomplished, which no other country has. Landing a man on the moon. Other countries have landed crafts, but they have not landed humans. So I should put a caveat on that. I mean, other countries have landed different kinds of spacecrafts on the moon. But in terms of sending a human being, I mean, don't forget, Russians sent monkeys and dogs into space, blah, blah, blah. But successfully landing a human being on the moon and bringing them back to Earth, it's only been the United States. So if you're looking to topple or unseat the United States as the most powerful, most admired country in the world's history, which we like to think we are, then you got to go down this checklist. And landing humans on the moon is on that checklist. We're the only ones who have done it. And so you know that other countries that are looking now 50, 60 years down the line to say, well, wait a minute, we've become a pretty big macher on the world stage here. It's time for us to beat our chest and to show our superiority. And they've been a little lax. They haven't been to the moon since 1972. We'll show them. We'll send them a wake-up call, just like the Russians did in the late 50s with Sputnik. It's about time the Americans got another wake-up call. So over the last several years, you've been hearing stories about how China and India and Japan have been planning potential manned space missions to the moon. Flying to the moon, landing on the moon, stepping on the moon, and returning from the moon. In a way to exert their superiority, or at least to show that they have the same kinds of technology, the same kinds of technologies and visions and capabilities that the United States has, and that they should be considered on the same plane. Well, as I said before, what do we love? We love a good competition. We very frequently get lackadaisical. We frequently take our eye off the ball. We frequently get a little too complacent. And it takes some newcomer to shake, rattle, and roll us back into reality and inspire us and challenge us and get us angry and once again want us to beat our chest. And so when all of a sudden countries like China and India and Japan are talking about going to the moon, we're like, whoa, wait a minute, the moon is ours. We still got our flag up there. There's nobody else's flag there. You can't go back to the moon before us. I mean, you might go to the moon, but you ain't going back there before we're going back. We went there first, and if anybody's going back again, it's us. Not one of you guys. And so, what do we have? Another space race. Another competition. Not as intense as the Cold War was, because, as I said before, the world in the 50s and 60s was much different than it is today. It was a much smaller world. It was a much more isolated world. And it was a much more black and white world. And the way the world was set up at that time was communism, evil, democracy, good. Good versus evil. It was something everybody could understand, and we relished the competition because we love competition. We love to win. We love to compete, and we love to win. Now, after we win, we don't really know what to do, but we certainly know how to compete, and we certainly do know how to win, but once we win, then we get in trouble. Then we are kind of lost. Well, we look around at each other and go, okay, well, now what? So we've been in a now what situation since 1972. And it's taken China, who probably has the best chance of doing it, but other countries to at least throw their hat into the space ring, if you will, like India and Japan. Now, who knows if, I don't even know if those, I mean, this was 2 or 3 years ago where you were hearing about India and Japan, I don't know economically if they have the ability to do that anymore. But China certainly has the capabilities money-wise, and I think the will. You know, China's playing the long game. China doesn't care whether they become the largest, most powerful country in the world in the next 5 years or the next 500 years. They just want to achieve it. That's their ultimate goal. We have a much more short-sighted thing, which can in many ways hurt us. We only look in the next 3 months or the next year. So we play the short game. But most of our enemies play the long game. But once we got whiff of this, uh-oh, we can't let anybody else go back to our moon. We might not. We may have lost interest in the moon. We may have lost interest in manned space flights to moon. We may have lost interest in landing somebody on the moon and seeing if that flag is still there. You know, but don't let anybody else go there. That's our moon. That's the way we are. And so, on February 6th, we are taking a very, very important and big step forward to once again land humans on the moon. But as I said to you before, do you know that? I mean, I know it's not the moon landing, but this is a crucial first step. The next step after this mission, and it may be in 2 or 3 years from now, but what is accomplished here in terms of the ability to take off from Earth, go to the moon, go around it, we know the information gathered, the experience gathered on this Artemis II mission then will lead to Artemis III, which is planned to land on the moon. So this is a huge, huge step. If we accomplish all our goals with Artemis II, due to be launched sometime, and if you know, as we all know, there's going to be weather aspects and a lot of things. Even though the planned launch for these four astronauts who will fly around the moon and back is supposed to happen on February 6th, it could happen on the 6th, it could happen on the 7th, it could happen on the 8th, it could happen a few other weekends in February or March or even April. But stands right now, supposed to happen on the 6th. So what a weekend. We've got the Olympics starting. We've got the Super Bowl on Sunday. And we've got, for the first time, the United States and humans are going back to at least the neighborhood of the moon. We have neglected the moon and its neighborhood for five decades. So this is a big deal. And yet I don't hear anyone talking about it. Like, hey, I mean, remember how excited we were a couple of summers ago with the eclipse? That happens all the time. We have eclipses. I mean, people are taking off of work. They were having parties. I mean, it was like this national holiday of with, you know, the sun and the moon in the same orbit. It's a natural occurring thing. It happens. It has happened. And it didn't happen because we did anything. It wasn't our accomplishment. But boy, did we go crazy over the eclipse. But I don't hear anybody going crazy about the fact that we are making a major step forward to going back to the moon, to landing on the moon. This should be something that we can find as a unifying event, as something to be proud about America. Because right now, so many people are not proud of America on both sides of the aisle. Again, I don't like to get into politics one side or the other. I'm just saying, both sides are not happy with the way things are. Both sides are escalating the rhetoric. We can't deny that. But here's an event that is about American ingenuity, about American knowledge, about American adventurism, about our vision of America. It's something that we should take great pride in, and as a country, we have the capability to do this, and we even have the mindset to want to do this. And I don't feel that. I'm afraid that as I said before, we don't look at the long game. We just look at what's in front of us all the time. And I think what's happening now in the last year or so, we're just looking about what's in front of us, and we're getting so crazy that we should take the blinders off and realize that there are some positives. There are things that we can agree on. There are things that we can celebrate together as Americans. We do it once a year on the Super Bowl. You know, even though the Olympics have, you know, are this competition between countries, same thing. The Olympics became huge sporting events at two major times. And it was all about political ideologies. When Germany hosted the Olympics in Berlin with Hitler in charge, this is before World War II, but Hitler was in charge and there was a lot of racial overtones with Jesse. Oh boy, now I can't believe that I'm. How am I blanking on the runner? Oh my God, Jesse Owens. Hello. You know, in 1936, the Berlin Olympics. Don't forget, World War II started in 1939, but Hitler was in power before then. But huge, huge overtones from a political and a racial, which should have given us a little insight as to what was behind this Hitler's mind when he walked out of the stadium. When Jesse Owens, a black man, had the audacity to win. And we should have known that this Hitler guy, there could be something going on with this guy. His whole Aryan nation, you know, supremacy thing kind of got blown away when Jesse Owens was the fastest man alive, proven in the Olympics with 4 gold medals. So that's when, once again, it seems like political ideologies play into our greatest achievements, sadly, as opposed to just for the sake of achieving them. But then, of course, after that, World War II ends and blah, 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 then the Cold War starts in the 50s, and then the Olympics take on a greater importance because, once again, Americans have to show that, and Russians have to show the world of which society is better and ultimately which ideology is better. And so, through the 60s and certainly in the 70s and even certainly in the 80s, I mean, the classic 1980 hockey game between the United States and Russia and the United States winning the gold medal, I mean, that was a huge embarrassment for Russia and a huge win for the United States in a time when we weren't feeling that good about ourselves as a nation. But sports and competition have always found a way to bring us together. And sadly, though, it is that competition rather than the more organic striving for excellence, sadly. And I'm not saying that the athletes don't do that. The athletes, they're legit. But I'm talking about the American psyche or even the world psyche. So it seems to me that over the last several decades, with the loss, with the falling down of the wall, America doesn't have just one enemy anymore. For 50 or 60 years, America had one enemy. It's Russia. But now, once again, we're a global world. We're a connected world. We're not very isolated. The world is not just black and white. And so we can look on the world stage and we have many enemies. Well, that doesn't... We like to have one enemy, one face that we can focus on. And so I think that over the last, especially since the late 80s, early 90s, when the Soviet Union fell, the Olympics have taken on less importance as a national event or even as a National Pride event. The Olympics have become more of a gossip story, you know, in the 90s with Nancy Kerrigan, more than, and Tanya, oh God, why am I blanking so much on the, Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan and Tanya Harding, the Olympics have become more gossipy than they have about, you know, country superiority. We used to get, as a nation, we would get very excited about the Olympics because we were going to beat those Russians. And it was the same thing with space. We were going to beat those Russians to the moon, and we did. And then what? And so we haven't had any competition for the moon in 55 years, 54 years. Well, then all of a sudden, as I said a few years ago, we're starting to get little dribs and drabs that China and Japan and India and Russia might be planning some kind of moon landing. Uh-oh. Right away, we get right back, boom. Can't let that happen. As I said, we love to just... We are so distracted by the new shiny item, and that became the shiny item. Suddenly, the moon had been ours. It fell completely off our radar screen, literally and figuratively. And all it took was somebody else saying we're going to go there, and then, oh, our ears perked up like a dog or a cat. Our ears perked up. What was that? Huh? What? You're going where? We're America. That's our moon. Our flag's there. And so, here we are. 2026, in the midst of some major internal struggle and internal chaos and this internal divisiveness in this country, no question about that. Whether you're either side of the aisle, you cannot deny that there's chaos going on, whether you support one side or the other. And so here's something that at least for a while we can rally around and be proud of being an American. Because as I said before, so many people are not proud of being Americans today. And here's something that is happening right at the right time. Not just the Super Bowl, not just the Olympics, but one of the greatest achievements in mankind's history. Leaving this planet and landing on another heavenly body. And we're about to take an important step that leads to doing it again in the next couple of years. And so all I'm hoping, all I'm asking, is that we pay attention, that we care, that we use this amazing event, whether it was motivated by, once again, competition and jealousy or chest pounding, whatever. The fact is, whatever got us inspired, we got inspired again. And we decided to show that you don't do that to Americans. But the news cycle today is being so dominated that everything else falls by the wayside. So I hope that this doesn't get lost. Yes, there's a dog show this week. Yes, there's a Olympic opening ceremony this week. Yes, there's a Super Bowl this week. But those are annual events, semi-annual in terms of the Olympics. But going to the moon, or just going to the vicinity of the moon, leaving the Earth's orbit and going out deep into space with human beings doing it, that doesn't happen every day. It hasn't happened in this country since 1972. And it is something to be proud about for Americans' capability, America's drive, America's ambition, America's boldness. We need to find reasons to be proud to be Americans. It's ironic that there's so much chaos and so much craziness going on, and we are in the midst of, in only, what, 6 months, celebrating our 250th birthday. I said this before, and I'll say it again. I'm going to say it until the day is that I really wonder what 4th of July this year is going to be like. I was a young kid. I do remember the bicentennial. I was a young kid, but I remember it. And as much as there was much havoc and chaos and uncertainty in 1976, no doubt about that. Vietnam just ended. Watergate just ended. The economy, the Cold War with Russia, the uncertainty of the future, nuclear weapons, inflation. It was all there. It was a very uncertain time, very similar to today in some ways. But at least on the 4th of July, we were able to rally and feel proud to be an American on our 200th birthday. And I remember that. There was a true patriotic spirit in the country on that day. I don't know what's going to happen this year in July, on July 4th, 2026, when we celebrate our 250th birthday. I don't know. There's going to be fireworks, literally and figuratively. There's going to be a lot of explosions, but I hope that there's not going to be a lot of flag burning too. And so hopefully we can begin to move toward that July 4th day where we celebrate our 250th birthday. We can find ways, at least temporarily, to find unity. And I think the Artemis II launch of Americans sending astronauts out of Earth's orbit back into the orbit of the moon and back as a first step to leading to Americans sending a manned space mission to get on the lunar surface again for the first time since 1972. More people should know. More people should care. As human beings on this planet and our capability as a species in general, and certainly as an American citizen, and the country that has the will and the capabilities and the vision and the boldness to do this. Whether it's motivated by superiority or not, competition or not, we're still doing it, and hopefully we will achieve it. So I hope that this week, February 6th, I hope that the launch goes on as scheduled. I hope it's a successful mission, and I hope at least for a weekend or a few days, whatever it takes for them to go take off, get to the moon, and come back. Like I said, I hear it might take 3 or 4 days for the whole mission to be completed. At least for those few days, I hope we as a nation can put aside our differences, put aside our disillusionment of America, and rally around what it means and what we've accomplished as a country. To the moon, Alice. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 506. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.
We've got liftoff.